Congratulations!
You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Katie Kondo.
That's our research assistant, Katie Kondo, stepping up to the plate because Maysoon, you're not going to believe this, but Maysoon made it to round two of the selection process for American Idol. So everybody send your best vibes to Maysoon to get her onto that stage with Ryan Seacrest.
Hug Seacrest for me.
Katie, let's give a quick bio for the listeners. I'm sure they've heard of you as our research assistant on this show, but you also have a degree in studio art from Mills College.
Sure do.
You double majored also in public policy.
That's right.
And you currently work at an unnamed education nonprofit in Oakland.
Yeah, perfect.
And you also are a co-writer of comic books and an artist and photographer in your own right.
Wow, thank you.
I say and photographer because, as you know, photographers are not artists.
Yeah, no.
JK didn't mean it. And finally, we are also girlfriends.
That's true. That's really important just to declare up front with everyone.
We've notified HR.
Mm-hmm.
And they're fine with it.
Okay.
Okay, so today we went over there to SF MoMA, which you had never, ever been to.
Yeah, I have only been...
Well, since they did the remodeling.
Had only been there for an event, but hadn't actually been to any of the galleries since the reopening.
So that's today, your first time there, and we won't even mention any of that. We're not going to mention your impressions of the building.
Nope, everybody already knows what it's like.
But there is a new show up there on the 7th floor, there where they keep all the contemporary art under quarantine, called Nothing Stable Under Heaven. Which was like co-done by practically every damn curator they got there. They got Joseph Becker, who's the architecture and design person. Dina Chalabi, who's the associate curator of public dialogue. Jenny Geith, who's the painting and sculpture assistant curator. Adam Ryan, who's the curator of photography. I think there might have been one or two others that I might have cut off in my picture I took there, the wall text.
This show seemed to be trying to confront the current political climate. I think a lot of shows are trying to contend with right now. And I think so. One thing that was a little different about this show is it seemed to try to take a sort of the lens of technology, but not talking about social media specifically. I feel like a lot of shows have been talking about, if they're talking about politics right now, they're also talking about social media specifically.
Uh-huh.
And I thought it was kind of interesting that this show didn't do that.
Yeah, I think I was relieved by that, maybe. I wasn't even thinking about that being absent. I mean, there was the video.
There were moments of it because I think social media is obviously something that permeates society right now. But it wasn't think about how Instagram and Snapchat are changing or Twitter are changing the political moment. It wasn't about that.
No. There was that Arthur Jaffa video.
That had some, it was splicing some,
YouTube
videos, viral videos, and historical videos of Black struggle in America.
Yeah, there was a lot of reference to state use of technology, that Trevor Paglen had a photograph of skyscape.
Mm-hmm, an orange sunrise. Yeah,
red, and with it, you can see a tiny drone down in the corner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had a sculpture, I guess that's what I would call it.
Yeah. It was in the round.
You could circumambulate it.
Yeah.
That basically was providing access to a Tor wireless network.
Yeah, so you can go in there and do all your hacking.
But I think that also might have been the only work in the show that was contending with the role of the museum.
That's the part. Okay, so this was even the wall text is talking also in a roundabout way about we're living in uncertain times and, artists have to serve the role of revealing the inherent volatility of our times. And it's a crucial moment for social movements worldwide, yada, yada, yada. We're always in political turmoil, but we're especially in it now because we have a fascist president. And you know that that's what's actually on all their minds, right?
Right. And not only did they like dance around that, but I think they also didn't even attempt, they didn't in any explicit way say like, sort of like, this is the role that art or museums can play. It's just like,
yeah, no, they'd never referred back to the museum. It's just crazy to me. You got Trevor Paglen over here talking shit about all our government surveillance. And then you got motherfucking dudes who supported Bush, who fucking did the motherfucking Patriot Act on the board of the damn museum.
Right.
You got people, you got labor problems in the museum. You got, you know, unfair pay and exploitation. Like, it always, that always is on the back of my mind whenever I see a museum show, especially at a giant, extremely well-funded museum like SF MoMA.
Right. So when they have a show that's trying to be like, ooh, we're engaging in the political discourse, it's like in such a tepid way.
Yeah, not to denigrate any of the work of these artists, right, but I think a lot of it is very poignant.
Totally. But I think, I guess going back to that, the like wireless network, I do think that's like the one way in which the museum, like, I think it was kind of acknowledging the fact that a museum like is ostensibly a public institution, even though it's not, well, like it's in fact
subsidized because it's a nonprofit.
Right. Exactly.
But you got to pay $25 to get in.
It's fucking a nightmare. Except we paid
none. Thank you very much to our friend who will remain anonymous who gets us free tickets.
Right. But what I'm saying is, I think that that work was saying that it was like reasserting that the museum actually can play a role in serving the public. And one way it can do that is providing access to the internet that is not surveilled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, good job, Trevor Paglen. Mm-hmm. 10 out of 10. The one piece that I especially did not like was that Mike Mills video of all the kids from Silicon Valley talking about their iPads and stuff. As a kid from Silicon Valley, Katie, how did that make you feel? Because you were born and raised in San Jose.
Yeah, sure was. So grew up in the heart of that culture. I think the thing that was hard for me, even though the wall text kind of alluded to this, that it's like they were interviewing something like 12 kids of whose parents worked in the tech sector,
right? Which is like, that is not,
if this video is supposed to be out about like what kids believe about the future, it's so weird to me to select these hyper privileged children. Ugh, there was so much about it that made me feel so uncomfortable. I think the first thing that was weirdly on view was like the clothes that they were wearing, because it was a interview.
Patagonia.
Yeah, it was a sort of like the kids were sitting in a chair sort of center, and so you could see their like torso and face, obviously. And so the brand of their clothes was always really noticeable.
Well, I mean, I wonder if that, we didn't like fully watch the full run of the video. And, you know, these wall texts are not written by the artist,
right?
You know, so I don't know if maybe it kind of was trying to get into that of like, these are the kids of the
like fucking, super wealthy.
Yeah. The fucking people pulling the strings on all this shit. It just seemed to me from the questions he was asking them, it was more like, because then they're listing off like, oh, yeah, I have an iPad. I have a phone. I have a this and a that. It like, it was just about like, oh, these kids are like in this dystopian future now where all their interactions are mediated through technology.
Right. Well, and they were being asked also about like what they think about the environment and about the future, and will we be like better
smarter,
off?
Smarter, not as smart.
Right. And there was a lot of like obvious probing around environmental issues specifically. And I just thought, it just made me bristle, because like, if you're trying to get it, like the children are the future and these children already have such a like dystopian view of the future, like those aren't the only kids who have interesting thoughts about that.
Totally. Yeah, didn't love that one for sure. Okay, also on that same floor was that, will you remind me of the name of the artist again? You had a Turner painting and you had a 3-channel video by this artist,
John Acomfra.
Okay, what was the name of that little micro show?
Sublime Seas.
I thought that Turner painting was interesting, how it kind of echoed that 3-channel video, but also in kind of some of the work in the rest of the Stable Under Heaven show.
I thought they did a really great job putting those two shows in conversation, and it actually like didn't occur to me that they were two separate shows.
Yeah.
Until later.
When you see all the text.
Exactly. Yeah. I thought that the three channel video was really beautifully made, and I think really wove together this interesting story around, like, around whaling, around refugees, and the history of slavery. The
transatlantic slave trade.
Yeah.
And, like, other, like, migratory animals. God, it was a lot. There was a lot to unpack in there, and I thought it was pretty moving. It's, like, a lot of the kind of imagery together when you're looking at, like, we kind of came in at the end and then stayed to see the beginning and didn't see I don't think we saw the whole full thing.
Yeah, there was some really beautiful, like, obviously archival footage of, like, a more contemporary whaling industry than you see in Turner's paintings.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's just incredibly, like, gory and also beautiful and also heartbreaking. And also
whales just being dead in the shallow waters.
Just, like, and, beached like,
breathing.
Whales.
God damn.
There was a lot of really beautiful, I think it was like BBC nature footage. A
credit sequence at the end, which you don't see often in videos in the museum context. It was like a very thorough credit sequence. And I also noticed that his, like, one of his other people in his production crew had his same last name. I wonder if they were partners.
Oh! Isn't it fun when partners do creative things together?
Yes. But anyhow, point is, it was a heavy fucking thing to see.
Yeah. I feel like we're not explaining the piece particularly well.
Okay, well, you got actors. You got parts that are staged with these, like, old-timey couple. Who were they? I'm not sure. You got quotes from fucking Melville and shit, and quotes from other pieces of literature, which he also credits at the end. You got, so that part's wild, where you got just, like, this two oldie-timey people on a rocky shore with, like, baby carriages and, like, crud there, staring at, like, a clock. Mm-hmm. You got other figures standing, and these are staged. Then you have archival BBC footage of, like, other things. I think some of the nature footage was made by the artist, and some was taken from, you know, the BBC archives of, like, nature stuff. Mm-hmm. You got archival photographs of slaves, like from America.
It's like very haunting.
Yeah. And then, you know, also radio audio talking about different things going on, like refugees, like drowning and stuff like that, like coming in boats. And
a lot of it was really, a lot of it was engaging with, like, the horror of the open ocean.
It was really. Yeah, like, I was welling up for sure. Yeah. I thought it was a really tense and emotional. I mean, I think of some of it, I was ready for it. It was our first floor we were on, so I was ready and open heart, open mind. Mm-hmm. And I think it really got me. I think if there could be other times where I come and I'm like, some of this is a little on the nose, like, especially the music. There's like symphonic orchestral music throughout the entire thing. That is, like, very, like, cinematic. It's, like, very, like, high drama, like, Hollywood kind of thing. But I think at that moment that we were viewing it, I was like, damn, this is really cutting me to the core right now. Mm-hmm. And, like, making me feel all kinds of ways. Because then also the other show, all I'm thinking about this whole time is, like, what is art? What is art's purpose? Like, it just feels sometimes so impotent when you're, like, confronting these, like, intense human suffering, you know what I mean, and, like, travesty.
Yeah, it really just I do think anytime I go to a big museum show like that, it ends up coming up for me, just that art is so powerless.
Okay, moving right along. All right. They also had another show that kind of had to do with politics. This, I think, was my favorite thing that we saw there, called The Train RFK's Last Ride. Is that right? Mm-hmm. You've got the little guide. Is that what
that
it was called?
That was on the third floor.
When Robert Kennedy was assassinated, they had to take his body.
They had to take it from New York to D.C.
And this was after Martin Luther King was assassinated, after JFK was assassinated. You got nothing but assassinations, turmoil, violence going on in the 60s. And so they took his body on this train, and people came out to see the train go by. And so this photojournalist named Paul Fusco was on the train and took photographs of the people that were watching, right?
That's right. So there are these sort of onlookers who were paying their respects to Bobby Kennedy.
Right.
By coming to see the train.
Exactly.
And it was totally like an impromptu thing.
Yeah, you can tell. There's people holding their babies. Some of them are huge crowds of people. Some of them are like very ghostly, like just one person standing in the middle of like a field. Rural area. And it was also interesting, I think, in the like didactic, they talk about the point of view of the dead, like as if you're seeing it through Robert Kennedy's point of view of like him going through this. And so anyhow, then there's a film by this artist, Felipe Perino. I'm never saying anything correctly. That recreated scenes from these photographs. Some of them really like perfectly recreated. Mm-hmm. Haunting just figures standing still watching the train go by.
Right. It's these people standing, you know, stock still as if they're in a photograph, but then you move past them in three dimensions on this track and you see the wind blowing and you hear the train. And
the only sound is like the sound that actually was happening, like the grass blowing, the train, whatever, nature stuff.
Right. I think it's interesting, too, because it's talking about or like recreating something that actually happened and sort of flipping this idea of a documentation.
I mean, when I first walked into the room where it was showing, and it's on 70mm film, it is beautiful. The detail is going straight into your eyeball. Mm-hmm. 70mm. And you're the damn projector, the fucking crazy room they've got the projector in. You can like, see the fat
they
film.
Actually, yeah, it's a huge film. And I think they did a really beautiful job. Not only the film that's on display, but like the apparatus that allows the film to be shown.
Yeah, the projector is huge. They got a whole like HVAC suction tube sucking the heat out of there.
And it's all encased in this like giant
vitrine almost. So anyhow, when I first went in there, I thought it actually was by the same guy that was the photojournalist who was taking the pictures, that this was a film he had made, because it looks goddamn the same.
You see these little hints that like actually, it's like very clear it's a recreation.
Yeah.
We go past a baseball field and it's very obvious that there are like parking signs that are contemporary.
Yeah.
So.
And there was also that little boy who goes to wave and then I think it's like he forgot he wasn't supposed to move.
So there are these like great moments where the sort of spell is interrupted.
Yeah. But. Man, I really wasn't thinking about the whole, like, you know, the actual documentation of the real thing versus recreating it versus, you know. Then in the third section, there is work by Rain Yelterstra.
Okay. That's a beautiful attempt.
I know. And they actually went and collected the photographs of the onlookers. Like slides that they had or, you know, actual, you know, printed photos of the damn people that were there watching the damn train. So you got their point of view of it, too.
Mm-hmm. And like a little bit of home video footage as well.
Yeah. And or showing
home film.
Home film. Because video wasn't really in the mix at this
right.
point. But anyhow, and then also showing the route that the train took. And I just want to say this was curated by that guy, Clement Chereau. Sure, I'm saying that wrong, too. Who's from France, who I gave a lot of shit for that Walker Evans show that they just had. Was it Walker Evans or was it Edward Weston? One of those big photo dudes from back in the day. And I was like, blah, 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 talk mad shit about that show. But God, I really loved this show. I think it was my favorite exhibition of the museum. But Katie, because I was getting really deep into my emotions again for this one, too, as maybe just after all the like political stuff that's being brought up on the top floor. Mm-hmm. Once we got to this, all I could think about is like the 60s, the hope of like the Kennedys and Bobby Kennedy and like the hope of Martin Luther King and then the assassination and the death of American hope for the future.
Damn.
I was welling up at that one, too. But was there hope? Who knows, Katie? It's such a dark and grisly world we live in.
Oh, my God.
What do you think? You were coming at it from a real academic critical eye. I was over here like crying. We were laying on the ground because that's the other thing I loved, the room that they were showing the film in was had a nice carpeted floor that you could lay down with your whole belly down on the ground if you wanted. Any kind of way you wanted to lay down, you could. Mm-hmm. No one was yelling at us. Mm-hmm. And I loved that.
Yeah. I just think like one thing that like photo and film can do particularly well is show like different perspectives and experiences in like a very literal way.
Yeah.
And I thought this showed it a really great job of displaying that fact.
Yeah, kind of breaking it all down.
Yeah.
I wonder what other things are like that. Have there been other investigations of like singular events where we can like look at it from a million different angles?
Like the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah. No, but like where artists came and picked it up, I'm sure there's like
there's such a huge long history of artists like following up on projects of other artists.
Yeah, totally.
And I think that's what like both the archival project and the film work were both in like that same vein.
Responding to this, these photographs, the original photographs. What else you got? You really liked that portrait show.
I did, Selves and Others. I thought it was like a perfect show to take your photo class to. Look, yeah,
if you're teaching a photography class to high schoolers or undergrads,
then,
or graduate students.
Yeah.
Continuing education.
That's right. All of the above.
Not elementary school, because there's
some real
sexy
nudity
stuff in there.
Yeah. But it was just really hitting all the portraiture highlights for me. It was a mostly photographic show, but it did have the two busts of Janine Antoni.
Lick and Lather.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that piece.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So one's made of chocolate, one's made of soap. And you can see that it's kind of been worn down in places. And on one, it's because she was like licking the chocolate. And on another one, she lathered up the soap and you get that. It just looks like, you know, like a marble sculpture that had been left out in the elements for a few decades.
But the show is primarily photographic, almost entirely.
Yeah.
And it's just got everyone. You got Sophie Cal. You just got everyone.
You got the Shermanator. Multi-generational. You got the early works and some of the more recent works of the Shermanator.
You also have two different portraits of Georgia O'Keeffe
I thought that's good, because if you're gonna have the ones that don't show her head and just show her boobs and her full bush that fucking Alfred Stieglitz did, you gotta also show her damn face and her glory. It would have been nice to have some of her work in the mix, but I don't know if that would really relate to the idea of the show.
And it just had anyone you think when you think of portraiture, they're there.
Oh, yeah.
They're there. Go to it. That's it. That's all I got to say about it. I mean, it's like, it's not, you know, I'm not going to be able to illuminate anything new about the work. A lot of it is very, like, if you've studied photography at all, you know these names.
Nan Golden.
It's a lot of highlight hitters.
Yeah.
But that's part of the reason why you should go see it.
And that show was curated by Erin O'Toole, who's the Baker Street Foundation Associate Curator of Photography.
Yeah. And I would say, the thing this show didn't do super well was show a lot of work by people of color. There was some.
They had a couple pieces by Yasumasa Morimura, who does a lot of like really interesting drag photos too, where he's like recreating classic portraits, but with himself.
Right.
Like, painted portraits. Like there's one of him as Rembrandt, I think, in there.
Mm-hmm. And there was a piece by Carrie Bae Weems, but I would say a lot of the work is by white people. A lot of work by women artists, but...
Yeah. Okay, my other problem with this show was that last piece where it's like it's a projection onto a sheet of a sleeping couple, and I think the couples change.
Mm-hmm.
That was not good. That was not a good way to end that show, which I thought was a really strong show, and then it ends with just this one piece in that room. The fucking projector was not registered correctly.
Yeah, I think honestly that really bugged me. Like, as a person who's done that exact thing before, projecting from the ceiling onto the ground. You gotta just respect your preparators, you know, and get that shit figured out.
Yeah, so your projection's not just bleeding off to nowhere. It really ruins the illusion that you're like, because otherwise you could kind of think that it's almost illuminated from behind, or,
right,
you know, that you're just drawing so much attention to the kind of material of the work.
Right, well, and also the, like, the resolution on the projector also wasn't great. Like, it just, I don't know what. Something went
wrong
there. Things
weren't going right. Yeah. And somebody had dropped, like, their, some, like,
receipt or something,
and it was kind of on the sheet. And I think it was kind of blending in, so nobody noticed, and I picked it up, and I think I freaked everybody out. But,
the other thing that was interesting about the show, though, I just don't want to close out the conversation mentioning the fact that the end caps of the walls were covered in this silver, like, reflective film, so you could kind of see yourself, but only in a distorted way because of the wall texture.
That was so weird.
And it just seemed like a bizarre choice. Like, it wasn't like a piece by someone. I don't know. It just seemed very odd to me. I don't even know what to say about it, except that it was weird.
Yeah, what were you supposed to do there? Was that a little selfie moment?
I'm really not sure.
To face yourself? Because I think there should have been more moments to face yourself in the fucking political shows.
Right.
You know? And I also have to say, there was a guy in there who was chewing his gum right in my ear.
Ugh.
Sometimes museum crowds make me appreciate work more. You know, like, there was a guy, we didn't even talk about the Magritte show. Are we going to?
Yeah.
There was a guy, really cute guy, with his little bowler hat on, who was, at first I thought he was one of, like, the museum guides who was, like, really getting into it, but I think he was a visitor, and I was like, oh, that's really cute, and he was going around with his little friend, and they were taking pictures of everything, and sometimes seeing things like that makes me, like, shake off some of my jadedness about museums.
Right, because he was so genuinely excited to be there.
Yes.
And, like, clearly having such a good time.
Yes. And they were engaging in conversations about, like, all of the work and, like, you know, it was really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Can I tell you something?
Yeah. Is it a secret?
It's a little bit of a secret.
Okay.
I loved the Magritte work.
The Magritte work, yeah.
I didn't love the way it was curated.
Okay.
I thought a lot of the spaces were really weirdly tight.
Yeah.
Like, there was too much
work.
It
was crowded. You know, it was, like, crowded. 90% of the people there were there for that show.
Mm-hmm. There's just a lot of, like, the floor it's on just has a lot of weird nooks and crannies, and I just don't think they navigated that as well as they could.
But wait, hang on. Anyhow, point is, then there's people that make me not appreciate it. Like, people who chew gum in my ear. Don't chew gum in people's ears at the museum. Anyhow, go ahead.
Okay, the Magritte show.
Yes.
Okay, here's the other thing that really upset me about the spacing.
Give it to me.
Okay. So they really crammed a lot of work into these strange rooms with nooks and crannies, like these strange small spaces that were angular or round. I don't know. It was weird.
I mean, I think some of it you just got to deal with because those galleries are funky shaped.
Right. Okay. But then when you go through the whole show and you get to the end of it, they fucking waste two rooms on this, like, dumb interactive, like, see yourself in a Magritte video thing, take a selfie, and why? Why? Those were, like, the only normal S-shaped rooms. Why?
Yeah,
Why did they do that?
I mean, the whole show, I'm just like, this is for the tourists. This is, you know what I mean? Like,
it was so...
I mean, I think that's valuable. Like, Magritte, like, is a huge famous painter. He's like...
But this show also, like, I didn't really care that much about his work or, I don't know, his
fight. You mean before?
It never really hit me. But seeing it in person...
Yeah.
I loved it.
There's value, for sure.
Totally. And seeing that, like, there are just a lot of fucking paintings.
He made a shit ton of work.
Making paintings seems hard to me. And he was really pumping those babies out.
Yeah, really. And, like, they're not just, like, you know, they're not fucking, let's not drag anybody else into the mix. It's a technically taxing bunch of paintings that he's made. You know, that's very deliberate and precise painting. So it's impressive how much fucking work he made.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need to give a room to just fake windows that you can take a picture of yourself in.
Yeah, I just didn't.
Well, and then also the gift shop.
Right. It felt, you know what it felt exactly like? It felt like every show at the DeYoung. It really felt like a DeYoung show.
Yeah, big time.
Where I feel like SF MoMA needs to be able to differentiate itself.
Okay, when we were like looking at the years that all the Magrittes were made, I was like, what the fuck? I guess I never really knew when Magritte was on the scene making his shit. Because I could have thought that all that work was from like the 1920s or something.
Mm-hmm.
Most of it was from the 1960s.
Yeah. Like the 40s or the 60s. So was Magritte
kicking it with like Andy Warhol? Are there photos out there of Magritte hanging out with like, you know, Lou Reed and shit? Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I mean, it was clear it was like the end of his, the later parts of his career there.
But I mean, there's also work from like 1940.
Sure, but yeah. Even still, a lot of it was from the 50s and 60s. And that did surprise me. I thought his work was mostly from the 30s. And
maybe
I think
just
because
his name is Magritte.
Well, I also think, well, like, when I think about the surrealists, I just think about an earlier part of the 20th
like
century.
Man Ray and yeah. Like pre-World War II.
And so how'd you guys do me so wrong in my art history?
Well, but I'm right there with you. I think it's just because Magritte's kind of his own guy off there and isn't, I don't know. I mean, I guess when we hear about him, we usually hear about Salvador Dali. And like we knew he was in the 60s because you can see TV shows with him on it.
Mm.
So anyhow, what did you guys think? Did you guys think Magritte was kicking it with Andy Warhol? Give us a call. 419-351-6606. You can email us congratulationspinetree@gmail.com. You can tweet us @PineTreePodcast. Also, I always forget to mention this, but we also have a listener survey that you can take anonymously at our website, congratulationspinetree.com. We're always just chomping at the bit to be able to hear your feedback. Speaking of chomping at the bit, is it champing at the bit?
I think it's actually champing at the bit.
I'm hosting a horse art trivia night at Royal Nonsuch Gallery on the 31st. There's going to be snacks, there's going to be drinks, and there's going to be trivia with prizes.
Prizes!
And Katie, you've seen the trivia.
Sure have. I've tested it.
And?
It's fantastic.
Thank you. People are going to have a good time. So come on down.
Come horse around with us.
Bring a team if you want, or you can go solo.
An extra prize for best team name.
Make it a pun, and we will celebrate that. So anyhow, come on down to that. Also, 500 Cap Street's got some new shows happening.
Oh, yeah.
They are presenting, I Hope All Is Well, Tony Mattelli's first solo exhibition in San Francisco. And what do you say to that, Kathy?
Whoop, whoop.
It's got all kinds. There's sculptures. There's disconcerting tension.
Uh-oh.
There's uneasiness and humor.
Ooh.
And that is going to be opening to the public June 23rd and up through October 13th.
Ooh.
So get out there.
That's a nice run.
If you haven't been out there, you got to get out there.
Get out there.
Also, we got a heads up from friend of the show, Margaret Tedesco. On Saturday, May 26th at 5, that's tomorrow, there's going to be a dedication for the Unity Mural, a new mural by Art Forces. And it is part of Bay Area Mural Fest 2018 at 4th and Webster on the back of Seawolf Public House. And the mural features the image of Chima, Mother of the Spirit Fire, as featured in a sculpture in Jack London Square, with permission of the artist Osprey O'Reilly Lake, whose vision is to place 8 Chima monuments around the world to create an inspiring bridge between cultures. 3 of the 8 monuments have already been placed in Hamburg International Airport in Germany, Mallorca, Spain, and in the San Francisco Bay Area at Jack London Square. Come through and have a drink.
That's in Oakland, everybody.
Yeah, here's a little picture of it, and it looks fucking impressive. And finally, Twitter has updated their terms of service.
Everyone's updating all their terms. Should we update our terms of service?
Oh, yeah, okay. What's our terms of our privacy policy? We keep your privacy 100% private because we honestly have no access to any of your data that we know of.
No idea who you are.
I mean, whatever way you're listening to this podcast, they're probably sucking your shit right up.
Mm-hmm, just vacuuming it up.
So get over to SF MoMA on a free pass that you can get from any staff member you know who works there.
Or sneak in through the public library situation, public education section.
What's that called? Who knows what's going on down there, but there used to be a way you could sneak around. Try to get involved with that. Or just honestly, when we leave our sticker somewhere outside the museum that somebody could just get. I put mine on a plant. Just look around the perimeter of the building for a sticker. Go on up to the 7th floor, hook into that Trevor Paglen Wi-Fi.
Oh yeah.
What were we talking about that I started saying this again?
Don't pay.
Oh, keep your data. Keep your data private.
Keep your data private.
We're keeping it private because we don't even know how to get to it. Although now that I can hack into the mainframe. Wait, I felt like we had one more thing to say about that Magritte. Okay, have they had any giant shows like that where they fully pull out the fucking light post banners and shit of a woman artist or a non-white male artist?
I do.
Or any, just not a white dude artist.
Think they had banners for the Cindy Sherman show before
was before they closed.
Yeah.
So since they got the fucking Fisher family fuckfest.
Hey, remember how Richard Serra is a local artist?
Yeah, isn't that wild?
Love it.
Okay, Katie, thank you so much for being our constant research assistant and a beautiful woman. Anyhow, and also to help let Maysoon pursue her dream of being on American Idol.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to sit in this chair today. Good luck to Maysoon. We're rooting for you. And remember to dial her number. Text 35174 for Maysoon.
Okay, I'll be doing that from the bridge.
To the other bridge.
To the island in between.
This has been Congratulations Pine Tree.